number 9B.
Let's go on to the next underlined statement. We come to the second part. So we find a new subject. What is Christ there, which we had in truth and spirit, namely the manifestation of the divine infinite calculus. Christ manifests that divine infinite calculus. If you look at that manifestation of the divine infinite calculus from the point of view of truth in absolute Christian science, then we get perhaps this short epitome, which is underlined, the manifestation of the Christ idea in the human. And you see, now we have the translation of the Christ, that's the second subject, from the point of view of truth, is always that which translates itself to the human level, so as to wipe out on the human level everything which is not in accord with the Christ idea. So there we have then suddenly the sense of translation. We have in that whole sense the translation of immortal mind and translation of mortal mind. John gives that in his biblical terminology, those two translations. We have the translation of how truth is healing, and so we get the sense of truth translating the Christ idea to every situation and bringing about a full manifestation of the Christ idea. When we look from the standpoint of love, we get another sense. Time just changes a little bit. We have here love as the universal acceptance. We had above love, universal acceptance. So it shows in the underlined epitome the universal acceptance of what? Of that calculus of spirit, of that divine infinite calculus of the Christ. So love is always that which accepts. Love accepts, it takes it in, it welcomes the idea, it embraces the idea, it protects the idea, it always takes it in. And so love accepts really the divine calculus of spirit instead of the calculus of materiality. So if you look at these two epitomes again, we hear a terrific sense of the Christ, the Christ translation. First, the translation to the human from the point of view of truth. Then second, from the point of view of love, showing that when it translates itself to the human, the world will not be able finally to resist it, that the Christ is working so long until the world begins to accept the divine infinite calculus in place of what the world is accepting today, namely the material calculus. It calculates only materially. There's a material universe, and there in there only material calculations are being considered as scientific. So here John gives a great sense that finally the world will come and say, well, we want also that what Jesus had, we want what he does, we want also to do. And so they all come to Jesus and want to know how does he do the work, so that they can do it themselves, and therefore so that the world accepts it. You see, so often we say, why doesn't the world accept it? Why doesn't the world accept Christian science? Why doesn't the world accept what we are saying, the great things that we find, that we have the definition of God, that we have the ontological categories, we have the oneness of understanding and being. We have that, we see that, but perhaps but the world does not accept it yet. And so we think, well, what can we do? Certainly not to do missionary work. That's not what we shall do. But to lift up, John always says, lift up your eyes, lift up your consciousness. First, we must see it rightly. We must be a master in that divine infinite calculus, or else we cannot attract the world to that divine infinite calculus. Therefore, it is our work in solitude and unknown from the world, where the idea is being born, where the idea is being nurtured and mothered, so that finally when the Christ idea knows when the time is ripe, that it will break through. It is the Christ will do it, not we. That's what he wants to show here, that if we lift up our consciousness to the calculus of being, then it lifts up the world too. If I will be lifted up, I will draw all men unto me. But first we must lift it up. So that is the second part. We come to the third part, to the underlined epitomes. And we know the third part is Christianity. Christianity, which has to do with man and the universe. And in that Christianity, we have seen that love and mind is that which shows that actually the perfection of love is always expressed in the realm of spirit. It is not yet expressed always in the realm of belief, but we must go out from the facts that are. And the facts that are is that really the perfection of being is always manifested in its idea. It is never without its manifestation. So in order that humanly we begin to realize that, we have to fill our consciousness with that absolute truth, that one truth, where we see that one truth is really that which resolves all the counterfeit beliefs. So that our epitome here is that the truth resolves the belief in a material manhood. Only as long as we believe in a material manhood, we cannot see a saved universe. We can never see a universe that is saved. So as long as we believe in a material universe and in material man. So we have to go really to love and mind. Love that only sees a universe of mind, only sees a realm of ideas of mind and nothing else, not the material universe that needs to be saved. As long as we believe that we have to save the world, we will fail. We'll fail. We will not make a contribution to it. John Dolly was very hot on that point, that this is a false attitude which the world has, which religion has. Religion always wants to save the universe instead of seeing that love has only one value and is not dualistic, that love is always only seeing its lovely idea. Love never loses sight of loveliness. Love never losing sight of the idea of the universe of ideas, of the realm of ideas. And only if we lift up our consciousness to that point, really, then truth can work. Then truth does work not only in the realm of ideas, but also in the realm of belief. And that is what he shows here very clearly, Jesus, that he shows that he regarded every situation of sin, sickness, death, and personal sin, he regarded them as an opportunity for the glory of God. He always said, this is for the glory of God. When they ask, well, who is to be blamed? He said, well, it's for the glory of God, so that God may be magnified, so that God may be glorified. He never accepted a dualistic starting point, never. And so the question is, do we do that too? Why? I always ask myself, why on earth do we always want to do something that is contrary to God? That's what I ask myself always. We know that God only knows a universe of ideas, but we want to see a universe of people and of bodies and of nations and of politics and military and finance and economy and I don't know what. We want to see something else than God. Well, that means that we want to be something different than God, that we are a God besides God Almighty. If you would only make that little decision, that very little, that small decision, and say, I don't want to see anything which God doesn't see. I don't want to know anything else which God does not know. Is that so difficult? It's absolutely simple. See, it always science can finally be brought to very simple points. Why do we want to do something else? There is no reason for it, except that we are a stubborn nation. That's what they already said in the Old Testament, that they said, well, you are a stubborn, stiff-necked nation. Huh? It is what Mrs. Eddy says, the unwillingness, gosh, to understand all things rightly, huh, binds Christendom with chains. That's what we do. It's our unwillingness to understand all things right. Understand all things right is to take the standpoint of divine principle, that alone is the principle of the universe. Now, in the first few hours of this week, we have seen that we come nearer and nearer to the point that actually one begins to find out that there is only a meta principle, a meta principle, a spiritual principle at work, and that that spiritual principle is constantly at work, and that's the only evolution that is going on without beginning, without end. Why on earth do we want to take a standpoint outside that universe, outside of that principle? This is something that is absolutely unconceivable for an intelligent person. We all think we are intelligent people. But we are not in that case. Huh? We are not. And so this is what he sees here with love and mind. He says, this is your standpoint in Christianity. Don't take any other standpoint. If you take that standpoint of love and mind, where we only see from the point of view of principle a perfect universe, including a perfect manhood, then from the point of view of truth in absolute Christian science, that resolves that whole belief that there is in that universe sin, sickness, death, and personal sins. That resolves it in one go from the standpoint of truth. If that truth resolves error, what is left over? The glory of God. And that is the standpoint of love that he takes in. And therefore, from the point of view of love, we have the epitome that we have the oneness of the infinite one. Or you could say we have the one including the infinite oneness, where all are one, so that they may be one. Yeah? Isn't that logical? Spiritually logical and simple. We cannot say that eight short epitomes are something very difficult. They are simple. So we come to the last one, which deals with that whole period of Jesus being crucified and resurrected. There we see two. Well, what is now behind that whole scene? What is that which makes the Word of God to be revealed? What is that which makes really the Christ to manifest itself and translate itself? What is really that which is behind that love that only can see its own loveliness? What is that which is behind? And lifts it right up and says, behind those three parts is the fourth part, namely the divine principle, omniactive. So we have there the principle in its omniactivity. First, from the standpoint of truth, again, truth that must show that it cannot be touched by error. So principle, I have said, maintains man eternally intact. It cannot be touched. Nothing on earth can touch man. No governor, no high priest, no theology, no ecclesiastical hierarchy, no politics, no finance, no anything can touch man. He is intact. From principle point of view, he is intact. And if we stay with that principle, we begin to experience really that nothing can really touch us properly. It may touch us first, it may hurt our heart perhaps a little bit, but then we know that principle is at work, and principle is always that that is scientific, and science always purifies every situation. So that we have here, principle maintains man eternally intact. It purified in Jesus' life that whole situation which seemed so awful before the crucifixion, but it couldn't touch him. And then from the point of view of love, again, the omni-action of principle, naturally then from the point of view of love, says to that principle, love is the fulfillment of that principle. So that combination of principle love always shows that that principle always has just one thing in view, namely love. What is love? The fulfillment of a plan, the fulfillment of a design, the fulfillment of what has been set out to accomplish. It has always an aim. It is teleological. It's telefinalistic. It always has a great aim which says, I'm going to fulfill that and nothing can stop it. It finds its consummation. Put that into our lives. I like to see that last part from principle and see, well, humanly, we really seem to go through similar experiences as Jesus did. We are led sometimes into Gethsemane, and we are sometimes attacked by the enemy by night and sometimes by day, suddenly attacked, that we find ourselves in difficulties, where we find, shall I back out or shall I go through it? And Jesus said, no, I'm not going to back out, I'm going through it. In a situation we find ourselves where we feel that the powers that are bigger than what we are, so that we can't do anything against the human power, the political power, the military power, the financial powers, the IRS power, and so on. Whatever you like, we always feel somehow we are cornered and that there is no way out. And Jesus was cornered in that way, humanly seen, but he knew something more than what we think humanly. He knew, and we can know, and say, no matter how a situation looks like humanly, they are all under the government of one principle. They are all for the fulfillment of a principle. They are all there for the glory of that of a principle. And therefore, that second part comes in where love consummates its plan through the omni action of principle. So sometimes we just have to take in the time sense until things work out the way the Christ idea wants to work it out. But time sense we also have to overcome. The time sense is a false factor in the calculus of being, and therefore we have to eliminate in our consciousness that time factor. Yes, these are the 8 points. I go through them again. If we have those 8 points, I feel we have a great sense of the Christ idea as science. So it's, again, I repeat, we must not lose sight of that John was writing about the coming of the Christ. That was his subject. He had to defend, so to say, Jesus appearing as the Christ against the whole world. Because the whole world said, well, Jesus is not the Christ, he is not from the Father, he's just one of those many Christs that came before. Because you remember that before Jesus came, there were many people coming up in the Jewish religion that said, I'm the Christ. Those 50 to 100 years before Jesus were full of people who said, I'm now the Christ, I'm now the Messiah. And the people usually believed them for a while, and then they found out that they were not the Messiah. And so when Jesus came, they said, oh, here's another one who comes up and says, I'm the Christ, I'm the Messiah, I'm going to save you. And actually, the Jews didn't believe him, and quite rightly from their standpoint, because their concept of the Messiah was that the Messiah would really throw the Romans out of the country, because the Romans were dominating their holy land. And so they considered a Messiah would have to show the sign of the Messiah as that which would throw out the whole Roman army. If he didn't do that, he wasn't a Messiah. So you can see how difficult it was for those first Christians to convince anybody there that Jesus was the Messiah, because Jesus was bringing a completely different sense of salvation. He didn't bring a political or a military salvation. Just as today, Israel wants to find the political and the military salvation and doesn't find it, just as 2,000 years ago, because the Christ is of a different nature than to be a great general or a great politician. So it was difficult at that time. So constantly, John, in the text, you remember, he was constantly pointing out and saying, Jesus is the Christ. He has been sent from the Father. The Father has sent him. He is the Son of God. And so that is the subject. Now, if we translate that into our lives, we can see that it touches also our sense of seeing what is the true Christ of today. The true Christ of the day is the Christ science. And therefore, we have to see that we are open to the acceptance of the Christ of today. So the Christ science can take place within our consciousness and mold our consciousness until the form of our consciousness is the same form as the structure of being. So if we go again and run through those underlined epitomes, we just listen to the flow of it. The first part shows really the appearing of the Christ idea. Today, the appearing of the Christ idea as the Christ science. How does it appear? It doesn't appear because we study like mad. It is because we entertain a consciousness of truth, and we know that truth always wants to reveal itself to us in that form and in that manner which is adapted to our age, which is not adapted to the age of 2000 ago and not adapted to the age of next century, of the next millennium. It is adapted to our present day, to that transitional stage where we go through a transition and must find our way into the future. So we can be sure, love says, that love will fulfill what truth has promised us to reveal. That this is not a vain revelation, but love belongs to the nature of being. And therefore, because it belongs to the nature of being, it is active, it is a fact, it is at work. And so we can rely on that love is going to fulfill what the truth is going to reveal to us today as the adapted science of being, adapted form of the science of being. So I get some kind of peace. Then I go to the second part and begin to see, yes, and that revelation will translate itself right down to our understanding. It will not be somehow up in the clouds where I don't see it, where I don't understand it, where I can't touch it. It will translate itself right down to the human, to our human understanding. Isn't that wonderful to think that that Christ has within itself the ability to translate its new message to us so that we can get hold of it? Not only that it translates itself to us, the next point from the point of view of love is that it acts in such a way that the world will listen to it, that the world will become aware of it, that little by little the world will adapt itself to it and will accept it. Then we come to the third part and see in the third part really how love and mind only knows a realm of ideas. And therefore, from the point of view of truth, it tells us that that realm of ideas therefore resolves the realm of its opposite, the realm of error. It resolves the realm of sin, sickness, and death, and personal sins. And love comes along and says, yes, and therefore only when you see that, when truth is doing that, and when you accept that, that truth is resolving those errors, only then you find really your oneness with being. Then you get the glory of God, the oneness of the Infinite One. Then all will be one. Not before. You can't have unity. You can't have oneness among men except they have first handled animal magnetism and have handled and resolved error and brought it right down to the point where we begin to see the absolute nothingness of nothing, where we are no more blinded by our five physical senses and take evil as something that exists. So that within ourselves we have that hope, we have that foresight, that we have that promise, so to say, that love will lead us into that oneness of being. Why? And what should our attitude be? Should we interfere with the world? Should we interfere with the problem? Should we act and help the problem? Should we do something? And the last point says, no. What you have to do is to lift up your consciousness to the point where you see you can't do anything which principle doesn't do. The only one that can do anything is the divine principle. So let just that divine principle operate and accept it that it operates, and then you will see that it fulfills and consummates the plan that was set out right from the beginning, that it fulfills itself. The plan was set out for Jesus that he has to come in the 5,000-year period to prove that death is not real. And therefore, that was his job to fulfill. And at the end of that epistle, that gospel, he shows that purpose for which he came to this earth found its consummation. He was resurrected and went away. Yes, we make a break here.